Chicago's home for sports.
Stream ESPN 1000 easily on the all-new ESPN Chicago app.
You're listening to Under the Hood on ESPN 1000.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. What's up, Chicago, and welcome in. Open phone lines for you, 312-332-ESPN, 332-3776 is the telephone number. Hit me up on Twitter, twitter.com, tweet J Hood. Coming up, we will start summer football early. We usually do it at 8 o'clock. We're going to do it at 7:30 because we've got a boatload of NFL Bears to talk about. So we're going to start at 7:30 because Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace met the media today with their Zoom call. So if you missed it earlier, you'll be able to hear some of what Nagy and Pace had to say. So we'll do summer of football at 7:30 and get your reaction to what they have to say about the upcoming season. Steve Palazzolo from Pro Football Focus is going to be with us as well. If you're a Pro Football Focus person, you're going to like Steve in about an hour from now. We'll hear from him and get his thoughts on the upcoming Bears season as well, and a really thorough breakdown of the quarterback situation with Foles and Trubisky. So keep it locked right here on ESPN 1000 for Under the Hood. If you're a football fan, I got you, starting at 7:30 as we start summer football coming up at the bottom. So the big story today is not necessarily what's happening in 2020. The big story is what happened in 2017. Because Baseball Commissioner Rob Manfred defended his punishment of the Houston Astros for stealing signs in 2017 and said Major League Baseball will institute new rules to police the use of technology before this season. This was written around spring training of this year. So there was, I remember watching this big interview that Rob Manfred, the commissioner of baseball, had with Carl Ravage. And he explained why he didn't punish any of the Astros players for their roles in the scandal, which involved illegal use of technology to decipher their opponent's signs to relay them to Houston batters in real time. And I remember Rob Manfred saying that, yeah, I understand people's desire to have the players pay a price for what went on here. I think that if you watch the players, watch their faces when they have to deal with this issue publicly, they have paid a price. It's based on their faces, says Rob Manfred, talking about those Astros players are still on the ball club in 2020 based on what happened in 2017 as they, for some people, feel like they stole the World Series because they were banging on drums and banging on things to let the runners know and let the also the batters know that, hey, here comes a fastball. Hey, if I do it twice, it's a curveball. All that stuff, right? There's been cheating in baseball and cheating in sports for a long time. But since we're talking about baseball, let's narrow the focus. Talk about baseball. Old Comiskey Park used to have a flashing light to batters to let them know if a fastball is coming. There used to be a lot of different ways where a third base coach, a first base coach, someone in the scoreboard in one of these old ballparks can let you know what's coming and what signs are out there for runners, all that stuff. It's been going on for a long time, along with, of course, in the modern day, steroid abuse and performance-enhancing drugs. Give a player an inch, some will take that inch and extend it to a mile. So we talk about this with Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. So I remember Rob Manfred saying at the time in March of this year that to say that the players from the Astros are skipping down the road into spring training happy, that's just a mischaracterization of what we are. Having said that, the desire to have actual discipline imposed on them, I understand it. In a perfect world, it would have happened. We ended up where we ended up in pursuit of really, I think, the most important goal of getting the facts and getting them out there for people to know it. So no players were punished for the Astros cheating their way to a World Series championship. However, there was a suspension of general manager Jeff Luhnow and manager A.J. Hinch for the entire 2020 season, stripping the organization of four draft picks and levying a $5 million fine. If you're a player on the other side, battling against the Astros when you're trying to do it quote-unquote right or as right as possible, And you come to find out that the Manfred administration has decided that no players would have a suspension. No players would have to sit out, just like those two front office people did, the manager and the general manager. And you're probably pissed off. And you feel like you've been cheated. Because as close as possible to being clean, you're trying to do it the right way. And the Astros couldn't care less about what you think. So now we fast forward from spring training, where that edict was brought down by the commissioner. And now we go to last night's game. And you knew it. It was coming. You just didn't know when it was coming, though. Astros-Dodgers. Dodgers reliever Joe Kelly, who was not even involved with the Dodgers during this time of the cheating by the Astros that year. Joe Kelly was suspended by Major League Baseball for 8 games for his actions in the bottom of the 6th inning of Tuesday night's 5-2 Dodgers win against the Astros. Kelly was had appealed, and of course he's going to play tonight because he appealed it, so his discipline will be held in abeyance. Dodgers manager Dave Roberts received a 1-game suspension, and also bench coach Bob Guerin will manage the club tonight. And Houston manager Dusty Baker was fined, clearly for talking about it openly. So let's go back in time, Tyler, and let's hear from Joe Kelly. So Joe Kelly, the pitcher, to paint the picture, he didn't hit anybody, but what happened is he threw a pitch in the area of the head of Alex Bregman and later taunted Carlos Correa, which led to the benches clearing. There was no punches thrown. Everyone just came out there just to jaw jack, but nothing else happened. But let's go back in time and hear from Joe Kelly last night about what happened.
It was a ball, obviously. Wasn't my best pitch. It was ball 4, and walked him, and never good to put a guy on when you're leading the game. So I wasn't feeling the greatest, wasn't the most comfortable. Took me a while to hone in my mechanics. I threw my curveball. I guess I didn't take too kind to it, a curveball. It is what it is.
Yeah, Kelly's suspension is because the previous suspension was for intentionally throwing, according to Chris Young, the vice president of baseball operations. And again, Kelly says, or Young says, that Kelly threw a pitch in the area of the head of Alex Bregman and later taunted Carlos Correa. That was the bottom line reason for the suspension. 8 games. Okay, so then Dusty Baker weighed in and gave his thoughts on what happened.
You know, balls get away sometime, you know, but not that many in the big leagues. And, when you throw a 3-0 fastball over a guy's head, now you're flirting with his, ending his career. Then a couple other guys' balls are close. What really enraged everybody is when, he told Carlos, he struck him out. And he told him, nice swing, bitch. And see, what are you supposed to do then? And then what upset me is that the umpires warned us. Why don't you warn him? He's the one throwing the ball, and he's the one that started this mess in the first place. So, I didn't like it at all.
Dusty Baker weighing in, the manager of the Astros. Joe Kelly, according to Lance McCullers Jr., who was with the Astros in 2017, he said this about Joe Kelly of the Dodgers. He said, Joe Kelly threw a ball behind Bregman's head on a 3-0 on purpose. Not only did he take it upon himself to send a message, but he wasn't even part of the team during that season. We knew coming into the game that he likes to go off script. It is what it is. It was done unprofessionally. What he did after he punched out Correa was unprofessional. Running into the dugout was unprofessional. So it is what it is. We're here to play baseball. We just want to win. That's it. Well, you knew that this was going to happen. Didn't know it was going to happen with Joe Kelly, but you knew it was going to happen, number one. But number two, that this punishment that is levied by Major League Baseball does not fit the crime of what is happening. This 8-game suspension is like 22 games missed in a 162-game season. They didn't even prorate this. It's a 60-game season that we're dealing with right now. And I'm just disappointed, and I'm not surprised. It's Major League Baseball. I'm disappointed that they look at Kelly and say, okay, he threw behind Bregman. He was throwing at batters for the Astros, which you knew was going to happen. And you give him an 8-game suspension, 8 games out of 60. And for some on the surface, like, oh, you know, it's just a week. No, it's not the point. Is that you have to be able to prorate this, I believe, to fit the model of a 60-game season. Tyler, I look at this like, okay, if it's 60 games, then I'm thinking three. I'm thinking a heavy fine. But you got to keep it moving because you think Joe Kelly's going to be the last one that's going to be thrown at the Astros? And here's the other thing. It's up to the umpires now to measure intent. Are you really trying to throw at the Astros knowing that they cheated or not? And so you knew this was intentional because it's the first time this is happening in abundance like this to the Astros. But the point is that there's going to be others that's going to hit Astro batters. Are you going to suspend them for 8 games, or does that feel more like two?
Well,
more like three?
Here's why I think the 8 isn't the worst thing in the world and maybe is acceptable for Joe Kelly. It's because it's a history thing. Like, if someone has tested positive for PEDs and then test positive again, they don't get the 60 games. They get, what is it, like 120 instead.
Yeah.
And so this is a combination of things. A, MLB knew they had to put their foot down on people throwing at the Astros. So I get that. Okay, maybe you tack on an extra game there. And then on top of that, he also has this history of throwing at guys, whether he was with the Red Sox or earlier in his time with the Dodgers. So since he's a repeat offender, and then MLB also has to put their mark down and say, all right, here's the standard, I think that's why this ends up being 8 games. It's because there's multiple factors that went into this.
He didn't mean it.
Was he have to go to Manfred and a written apology or write on the whiteboard, I will not hit Astros again?
He'll do it anyway.
He doesn't care. That's the thing. Joe Kelly does not care.
He wasn't going to kill him with those pitches. Because you see how, I mean, I think that I don't believe in throwing at batters as a baseball
fan.
Nor
do I.
Or I don't believe in it. I think that that's really old school. And if it's really old school, by the way, do it like it was back in the day. Like, if you're going spikes up and you're going to be more physical, imagine baseball being a physical sport. And actually, I actually saw that in my lifetime as a kid, where baseball actually was physical. You're going down that first base line and you get the second baseman trying to turn the double. And all of a sudden that runner puts a forearm shiver underneath your chin and it's not a suspension or you're not thrown out of the game. That was a thing. I actually saw that. But it's not even as physical as it once was. And you knew this was going to happen. 8 games. I say 3 or 4 and a heavy fine, but 8, that's really, really hefty to me. It's hefty. Yeah, he's a repeat offender. So if he's a repeat offender, then take him out of the sport for the entire season. If you're that strong about it,
I mean they essentially took almost 20% of his season right here. So I think that's a lot, especially for relievers who they're available not every day, but you're available 2 out of every 3 days pretty much. So I think that MLB gave him the right number of games.
That's a lot. That's a lot. And you're going to be working in the front office. Of course, you're going to support them.
This is what you want. This is your wish.
You wouldn't do that to them, though.
I might have given them 10.
Oh, that's so harsh. As you go down the offices to your, you know, drinking your latte as the commissioner of baseball.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Just spread the avocado on my toes. 10 games for you, Joe Kelly.
10 games. What else is happening today? Let's just keep it moving, right?
Well, go back to TikTok now.
I just think I think 3 or 4 of it is fine. And by the way, my bigger point is, what about what's next, right? What's next? If someone else throws at or mistakenly hits the Astros, not saying this was a mistake, but if someone does let one fly against the Astros, that guy's suspended too? That's, you know, how do you measure someone's heart? I guess we're going to find out in these 60 games. Coming up next, there is a changing of the guard for the IHSA when it comes to fall sports, and Notre Dame has found a conference. Next on UTH.
It's Under the Hood. Follow us on the gram at IGJ Hood and at ESPN_Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports, ESPN 1000.
Michael O'Brien is excellent when it comes to covering high school sports in the state of Illinois. And he puts this column out this afternoon. IHSA moves football to the spring. Girls volleyball and boys soccer will also move to the spring in the IHSA's new sports calendar. So there won't be any high school football in Illinois this fall. The announcement was expected to come from the IHSA today, but Governor Pritzker used his COVID-19 press conference to scoop the IHSA and announce new restrictions and guidelines for youth, high school, and adult recreational sports. Craig Anderson, the IHSA executive director, was caught by surprise. He said the governor was originally supposed to speak at 2:30, not noon. We're in the middle of our IHSA board meeting, and I got a text that says that the governor is going to move the press conference up. Students and parents all over the state were eagerly awaiting the 2 o'clock news conference. Then Pritzker's surprise announcement further politicized the contentious debate on whether or not they should restart high school sports. So the major change has football, girls volleyball, and boys soccer moving from the fall to the spring season. And Dunbar football player Mikel Fowler says, that's a huge relief for me. I was really worried about the possibility of it being canceled. So that's it. That's the story. The high school sports year, which traditionally was divided in three seasons, will consist of four shortened seasons this year. Fall will run from August 10th to October 24th. Winter is November 16th to February 13th. Spring from February 15th to May 1st. And the new summer session will run from May 3rd to 26th of June. Fall sports include boys and girls golf, girls tennis, boys and girls cross country, girls swimming, and diving. And the winter sports, of course, I think we know, bowling, girls gymnastics, basketball, wrestling, boys swimming. So that's interesting. And it's a mixed reaction, obviously, for coaches, knowing that the fall sports are going to be moved up in a different way. So that's and Pritzker with the scoop, by the way, that was supposed to come from the IHSA, and he mentioned that in his COVID-19 press conference earlier today. Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. But don't let me bury the lead. How many people, including Tyler, has been pounding the pulpit saying that Notre Dame needs to join a league? Well, the ACC Board of Directors voted today to proceed with an 11-game football season that begins the weekend of September 12th. It includes FBS independent Notre Dame playing a full league schedule, but only if public health guidance allows. Now, let me go to that tweet from our guy Pete Sampson. We always have him on during our college football shows and a frequent guest here on Under the Hood. He covers Notre Dame for TheAthletic.com. And so Pete Sampson says this: Notre Dame, right here on the home of the Irish, ESPN 1000. Notre Dame's schedule that they lost: no USC, no Stanford, no Wisconsin, no Western Michigan, and no Arkansas. Notre Dame's schedule added: North Carolina on the road, against Syracuse at home, Boston College on the road, and against Florida State at home. We will see on Navy, but that's the game Notre Dame wants to keep. I tell you what, Tyler Key, that is a softer schedule than what they had, because...
You talking smack about Syracuse? What? What's this? No. It's interesting. Yeah, because, I mean, you look at USC, Stanford, Wisconsin. Those are three major powers. And while North Carolina's on the up and up, up and up and good, formidable program with some staying power. Sure. Those are two different things. Florida State, yes, they've got that behind them. They've got down. The name, but they're not the Florida State that they used to be. So, I mean, I'm not going to say they got four softballs here, but they got...
Four softballs.
Yeah. I think they got three and a half, but...
Stop trying to take up for the orange. I mean,
it's for UNC.
Yeah, we'll see.
On the road at UNC, that's not going to be an easy game.
No, but they'll win. That's winnable.
It's definitely winnable. All four of those games are winnable. I mean, all four of the games that they lost on the schedule were winnable too, or five, I guess. But I think the interesting thing here is also the fact that yes, the ACC released this big grid of games. but they're still making teams play one non-conference game as well. So Notre Dame's going to have to find a way to get that non-conference game, and right now that's why they're hanging on to Navy as hopefully that team that they can keep on the schedule.
Arkansas was going to be a win for the Irish. Was that, yeah. I just got Phil Steele's magazine. I just can't reach it from here. But I was going to look at the schedule and see. I'm assuming that was going to be a home game for Notre Dame, right, against Arkansas?
Probably,
they
yeah.
They weren't going to Fayetteville for that? I guess not.
Or maybe it's a home and home, too. That's you know, always in the cards, too.
Hold on a second, Todd. Talk to the people.
All right, well, basically, when Notre Dame gets this new schedule now, I think it's going to be interesting, too, to see what sort of agreement came into place with NBC as well. Because I know Dave Cutcliffe was not happy about the fact, and he's the head coach at Duke. He was not happy about the fact that, okay, if they're gonna leech onto us, we should be seeing some of that NBC money as well. So I think that's also going to be another thing that a lot of these ACC schools they're gonna try to pry some of that NBC money out of Notre Dame as a result of all of this.
Yeah, that was going to be the original schedule at Navy was going to be the start in Dublin. But that's not happening now, clearly.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Arkansas was going to be at home, so Arkansas was going to come to Notre Dame. I wonder, was that going to be a home-and-home? SEC team against Notre Dame? I wonder if that was a home-and-home agreement.
That feels like a home-and-home, yeah.
Western Michigan, Wake Forest, Wisconsin. Right in the heart of that schedule, it was going to be very compelling. Wisconsin-Notre Dame was going to be very interesting October 3rd. Stanford, that's always a coin flip game, by the way. Even though it's going to be at Notre Dame,
right?
At Pittsburgh is a win. Duke, they're a little funky with the offense, but you know that was going to be a win. Clemson on November 7th.
Is boy, that game still there?
Yeah, that's going to be something. That'll tell a great story for both ball clubs,
right? And that Ooh. Game is in Clemson because I know some of the locations got flipped around as a result of this season too.
I got to look at that.
Here, I got the tweet right here. Clemson is going to play Notre Dame in Notre Dame. And in South Bend.
75% Clemson fans there. Just like it looks.
Those fans are great. Have you ever been to Death Valley for a Clemson football game?
I have not.
Oh, that's a bucket list. It's a good time. I recommend adding that to your college football venture.
That is something. All right, so that's we just wanted to keep you abreast of that because that is people say, you got to get to a conference. Okay, so and we saw the schedule; it leaned ACC anyway, but now the 11 games will be played over 13 weeks with two built-in bye weeks. The ACC championship game will be played in Charlotte on either December 12th or the 19th, and will feature the top two teams with the highest conference winning percentages.
Right, so one division now in the ACC.
Yes. So that's very compelling.
And
but a softer road for Notre Dame,
yeah,
feel.
And remember, that extra game is important here because of the fact that when you bring Notre Dame into the ACC, you now have 15 teams. So you've got an uneven amount of teams, and you have to go back and forth with each other. It's like in basketball how every weekend there's one ACC team who has that Saturday off because Notre Dame's a full-fledged member. Now you're going to have to make sure everyone can get that extra game. And for a lot of these teams, it's going to have to stay in state.
So
that's tough for Notre Dame, too, because Purdue and Indiana cannot play Notre Dame because of the Big Ten rules of how they're scheduling their layout for the season.
What's your suggestion for the extra game since it's not going to be Navy?
Probably.
They're trying to keep it. They're trying.
Again, they're holding on for a thread there. But I would say, because you have to play a game. You don't want to leave it up to the fact that you couldn't schedule a game to be a big difference maker. But I would say maybe try for Ball State. I don't know what the MAC has done yet. I'd have to brush up on the MAC. But I think Ball State, I mean, that's a team that you've had relationships with in the past. I feel like that's the last sort of hope there.
Let me see what they're doing. Hold on a second. Because I got the Phil Steele magazine. it just came in. That's my guy.
Do you think any team would entertain the idea of playing a home-and-home with Notre Dame for this year? Whereas you play a team twice, or maybe you'd have to play a team twice, but you'd also have to, then that means another team would not have their extra game schedule. Because what was it, UNC was supposed to play, was it NC State or Wake, I think it was Wake Forest, but they were playing a non-conference game, as even though there was two ACC opponents. I remember that was another thing that I think was supposed to happen. It happened maybe last year, and then it was supposed to happen every couple of years with UNC playing a non-conference game in an ACC against an ACC opponent.
I don't know what the max deal is as far as what they want to do with their fall schedule, Tyler, but Ball State's got Maine on September 3rd, at Michigan on the 12th, at Indiana on the 19th.
Well, that Michigan game and Indiana are now off the schedule because the Big Ten is playing conference only.
Yeah. I just just reading what it originally was. And against Wyoming on the 26th of September. Boy, Ball State really needs that money. Not going to get it. But maybe they can get it from Notre Dame. For them coming to Notre Dame.
Well, people are picking off that NBC money now, too. This is just a giant whirlwind of problems. And I'm coming up with some of these problems on the spot here, too, of the problems that are going to persist with college sports this year.
All right, coming up, we will start summer football. Some thoughts from Matt Nagy as well as Ryan Pace. How do they see the 2020 season for the Bears? We'll have that next right here on Under the Hood.
This is Under the Hood on ESPN 1000. Follow at TweetJHood on Twitter.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports.
The summer of football.
All you can ask for is another opportunity to play this game. It burns in me.
On ESPN 1000.
We don't know how many we got. I don't know how many I got. Make it count, boys.
Mahomes flushed out again. Turning the corner. Fires downfield. Only Mahomes.
You throw to score. You run to win.
Here's Saquon Barkley. And he's off to the races. The 30, the 20. Saquon for six.
The summer of football at 8.
Here's a quick throw to Miller. Good throw. Touchdown. Fake to Armstrong. Run. Book five.
Got time. Launching for the end zone. Jump ball. Touchdown. Terrence Marshall.
The summer of football with Jonathan Hood.
Yeah! That's my dog!
On Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app.
It is the summer of football. Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. We have so much football. We're starting summer football right now. And we'll also go to Pro Football Focus and take a closer look at the Bears, 8 o'clock right here on ESPN 1000. Do you like this? You like this tweet here, Tyler, as we get started talking about the Bears? You like this tweet from our guy, Chris Spatola. Chris Spatola, who works for SiriusXM, the Big 12 Network, he says, Notre Dame has to share its NBC money with 14 ACC schools.
Yeah!
Whoever thought that'd be a
share.
Thing. That's what it says here.
I love Chris
Spatola. That's pretty funny.
I love that. Well, I mean, hey, I mean, Notre Dame, they might have to dig into the pockets, scrape out those pennies to try to pay Ball State to come play a game. So
right here on the home of the Irish, ESPN 1000. So let's talk to the Bears. The Bears had their press conference, their Zoom conference today, and Matt Nagy and also Ryan Pace, the general manager of the Bears. If you missed it, here's some thoughts from Ryan Pace and from Matt Nagy. One of the questions was posed was, what are you doing to get your rookies ready?
That's some of the creativity that we as head coaches are going to have and how we want to handle practices. Because let's face it, when we're in meetings, whether it's virtual or in person, you can create that. When you guys see our indoor complex of 120 yards of football field and you see how we're spaced out, you'll see it looks good and it feels great. When you're out of practice, you got huddles. You got position coaches trying to talk to their position groups on the sideline when they're not on the field. And you want to have that competitive balance of 1v1, 2v2, and 3v3 in practice. So the word risk mitigation, I think, is big in all this. And the fact that anytime you can try to eliminate possibilities of not social distancing, you need to do it. When you're out there playing football, it's going to be hard to do. So if there's times you can reduce those chances, I think you can do it. But for the most part, Stacey, we're going to competition is huge in this training camp. We can't fall away from that. So one-on-ones, 11-on-11, 7-on-7s, just competing. And if that means that, for instance, in the quarterback situation, in the quarterback room, as long as it's fair, they might be going, those quarterbacks might be going, throwing to the twos and the threes, but they're going to be doing it versus the same competition, so we can evaluate that accordingly. But there'll be some, I think every coach in the league is going to be different, and I don't know if anyone has the perfect answer, so we'll just have to see.
Adam Jones.
Hey, guys. To go back to the quarterback conversation here for a little bit, how much did you track maybe their work that they put on themselves this offseason? I know Mitch, he changed private quarterbacks coaches. I don't know what you know about Jeff Christensen. I know he's worked with Patrick Mahomes and others. What do you make of that work, and how much did you track what Mitch and Nick Foles did on their own?
Well, a lot of it, Adam, is tracking through our position coaches who they have a great relationship with, and, you know, between, you know, Flip and Bill and Rags and myself, we just have really good open communications, and we understand that. And so all these guys, they have their own plans that they create and what they want to do. Obviously, you brought it up with Mitch, with what he did. And one thing that you see constant with these guys is that they're very committed to being the best quarterback they can be. We're all kind of refocusing. You know, we all have our own stories from last year, and that thing's in the past. Now we're currently working together to in each position to be the best we can. So we have great communication with them, and there's zero worry about, you know, too much or too little.
JD.
Hey, Matt, I know you mentioned, again, back to the quarterbacks. I know you said it's going to be wide open and these guys are going to come in clean, you know, evaluate every play, every throw. I just wonder with Foles, you know, not having the offseason program with the guys, now we're getting going late here, no preseason games. It would seem like almost that he might have a bit of a disadvantage because he's not as familiar with the guys. How do you see that? Is that not true? I mean, do you really see him coming in here same exact footing as Mitch, despite not having been here before?
Hey, Jeff. No. Yeah. So here's what I would say to that is I think for sure it's an absolute more of a disadvantage not having what he could have had is building the relationship, and probably more specifically is the timing with the wide receivers that you get in the OTAs, where you can run route after route after route after route. You get to see and feel how guys time up their motions. So for sure, that will be a disadvantage, something that he could have had that he doesn't have. But those guys know that. He understands that. And for both of them, you know, it's just going to be neither one of them should go out there and try to do too much. You know, they just need to be themselves when they're out there, play football, and let the results take care of themselves. They're both really good people. So in the room, it's going to be really good there. Flip's going to do a great job fundamentally getting them right. But again, just like we talk 30,000 foot view of practice, Flip and those quarterbacks are going to have to be really good in regards to, you know, what we do offensively, what we're working on, making sure that it's things that we really feel good about using down the road, because that time got crunched. So, he could, you know, Nick knows that he's a smart guy, and it's, but at the same time, I think he'll be hungry to get back out there and just really get on the field and try to build those relationships up that he lost.
Caitlin.
Matt, kind of going off of that, you said that you don't want them to think about, overthink it. What's your message to the rookies that maybe are kind of anxious for the fact that they're not going to have a preseason, they're not going to get these reps, they want to do too much, they want to make an impression? What is kind of your message, and how do you not calm them down, but kind of give them this assurance that they're here for a reason and they can still kind of show you what they're capable of doing?
Yeah. Hi, Caitlin. I think with the rookies, they realize that the one thing they heard from all of our guest speakers and people coming in that were giving them advice throughout the offseason is, if there's one time, one season to know the playbook inside out, it's 2020. And so they don't have preseason games to go out there and make plays and show us a play or two that we see. They don't have that now. So now they're going to have to do it in practice. Well, the one way to handle that is to understand that, again, if you try to do too much, or if we paralyze them mentally because we're giving them too much that they can't think, if they're thinking on that field, that's our fault as coaches. We have to be able to evaluate. And they're just the way it is right now with these teams, there's going to be, with no preseason games, there's going to be players that get cut that probably shouldn't get cut. And that's where I think Ryan and our personnel staff has a really big challenge ahead of them, along with the other ones in the league, to find who those guys are. And hopefully we're on the end of keeping the right ones and not getting rid of them, but it's going to be harder for us, but we feel prepared for it. And I think right now, from what our rookies have shown us in the last couple of days in these walkthroughs, I've come away pretty impressed with the way that they've taken the Zoom meetings and transferred them to the football field.
Mark Potash.
Matt, just curious, once you have a winner in the quarterback competition, how long will the leash be, and how delicate is that balance to not have the winner, looking over his shoulder, but still being prepared to kind of cut bait if need be, as the Bears did with Glennon? And for Ryan, real quick, if I could ask, what influence will you have on a quarterback competition, especially with regard to the final decision?
Yeah, Mark. So I'd say in regards to with the quarterback, so number one, this is it's a seasonal process. So what I mean by that is that obviously we're going to have to name a starter at some point. We as a staff internally will discuss that and how we want to go about that. And then when you name that starter, you obviously want that starter in a perfect world to be able to go win a Super Bowl. There's so many different things that can happen, especially this season. So we understand that. And I think at the forefront of us, of being open and honest with them, we explain that, hey, if you're a real professional in this thing, both as a player and for us as coaches, we communicate to them that you better be prepared for every situation, right? How do you prepare mentally? Because that's a big part of this. So you can take two guys and you can say, okay, player A is the starter, player B is the backup, right? How does that go going into week one? If I'm player B, what is my mind like going into that? Because I'm one play away. Well, if it's flipped and player B is the starter and player A is the backup, how's my mindset right now going into the season to week one? Well, there's a lot of games that are played. So those guys are both wired the right way. And when you're open with them and you explain that stuff and you don't hide anything, you just tell them how it is, it's pretty simple. And now it's just a matter of having a feel and knowing. And we'll have a nice little plan and how we want to evaluate here in training camp. And then also, how do we evaluate fairly, right, during the season in the games? Because as we all know, there's way more to, speaking of quarterbacks, there's way more to playing football than just the quarterback position. There's 10 other players on that field. So what goes into making that decision?
Yeah, Mark, just to kind of add on to what Matt said, I think, understanding there's going to be ebbs and flows to the evaluation, and it's going to be an evaluation of the entire process, not just each practice. And I think letting it play out naturally, letting it come to us. And the good thing with Matt, it's constant dialogue, constant communication, constant collaboration between him and I and his coaching staff and the personnel staff. So like everything we do, it'll be a collaborative decision. And I think what makes it easy is just our constant communication that Matt and I have.
And, one thing, Mark, one other thing, we talk as coaches and we play scenarios out too. We're just like everybody else. And you say, well, the one thing we're going to do is if we have however many padded practices it is, or how many total practices you have in competitive periods, as we're going through this thing, if one of the quarterbacks is stinking it up and he's playing like crap, we're going to tell you you're playing like crap, right? And if you're playing really well, we're going to tell you that in front of the other one. They're both going to know when someone's playing good and someone's playing good, or someone's playing bad and someone's playing bad. They're going to know that. And so when the time comes that we inevitably need to make a decision, trust me, it's not going to be a surprise to them.
It's interesting, some thoughts from Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace. A collaborative effort. I believe the head coach should be able to, as a former quarterback himself and as a former offensive coordinator, shouldn't he have full autonomy on the decision to have Trubisky or Foles to be the guy? Why is it always got to be Pace? Pace could be part of it but I don't know. I don't believe in the collaborative effort. I think that should come to Nagy and the offensive coaches. But hey, that's just me. Summer of Football with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000.
This is Under the Hood.
Listen to me. Under the Hood podcasts are available now on the all-new ESPN Chicago app. Available on your device now.
This is ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
We'll continue our summer of football and go to Pro Football Focus and really take a look at what the Bears could be like for 2020, especially the quarterback position, the running back position, the offensive line. We'll break all that down coming up at 8 o'clock as we continue on our Summer of Football Supersize Edition right here on ESPN 1000. Like to remind you, tomorrow we'll have the baseball show presented by Goose Island Beer Company. Of course, it happens at 6 o'clock right after Waddle and Sylvie every night right here on ESPN 1000. And tomorrow I will be working with Chris Bleck. Bleck and I will be together as we count down the minutes to the return, the restart of the NBA season. So Chris and I will be able to give you a little bit of a preview on what to expect for the upcoming NBA season. They're in that bubble in Orlando, and the numbers are minuscule, almost zero, when it comes to positive tests with COVID-19. I've been watching some of those scrimmage games, and you know what it reminds me of? Tyler, you know what it is? It looks like
Summer League.
That no, you know, Summer League has some people in it. No, it looks like the G League showcase.
Okay.
You ever see that in Vegas where like there's nobody there and it's just big screens?
Yep.
Yeah, that's what it looks like to me. Like the G League showcase or some of the G League teams that don't have any fans, but they do have, you know, a place for guys to play. You know? So it's really relaxed atmosphere, but it's going to ratchet up here pretty soon, starting tomorrow with the NBA season. So Bleck and I will have that for you starting at 7 during this time, as a matter of fact, right here on ESPN 1000. More of the Summer of Football. What can we expect for the Bears for 2020? Find out next right here on UTH.